I think the neatest thing about this team is they played the right way. They played together. We were great 1-12. You know, Chauncey told you they really were a team and they respected each other. And I think the nice thing about us winning is it's going to help coaches all over, because young kids, I think, get caught up in basketball being an individual sport. And I think the way we played, I think it'll help a lot of coaches when they talk about kids, the importance of being part of a team.
The voice you just heard was Larry Brown describing the team he coached to the 2004 NBA title, the Detroit Pistons. They weren't supposed to win the championship. Heck, they weren't even the top seed in their conference. They were a starting five of castoffs, all deemed expendable or flawed, before landing in Detroit. Chauncey Billups had been a flop as a top pick in Boston and had played for four teams before Detroit. Ben Wallace was undrafted and had been a throw-in in the Grant Hill trade 4 years before. Rip Hamilton was traded away by Washington after Michael Jordan told him he wasn't good enough to wear Jordan brand shoes. Tayshaun Prince was deemed too soft by 22 teams who passed on him in the 2002 draft. Rasheed Wallace was a hot-headed loudmouth for a Portland team known as the Jailblazers. Even the coach was a cast-off. Larry Brown was a drifter whose coaching resume listed 10 teams before Detroit. They had no superstar, unlike the dynastic Los Angeles Lakers, who ruled that era. But the sum of a championship team is greater than its parts. Never was that more true than with the Detroit Pistons of 2004. What they had was a team ethic, a belief in themselves, and a coach who insisted basketball should be played, in his words, the right way. They became known as the going-to-work Pistons, which suited blue-collar Detroit just fine. In the end, the 04 Pistons outworked all their opponents. They didn't rest until they laid claim to an NBA title and a cherished place in the hearts and memories of Detroit sports fans. Up next on that championship season, the 2004 Detroit Pistons.
Welcome to That Championship Season, a podcast about famous and or infamous champions and their moment in history. Championships are the stuff of myth, fable, and legend. Every champion has a story, and every season is a story that lives on in memory or in frame. That championship season will take you back to some of the great athletes, teams, and competitors, and bring alive their words and deeds, triumphs, and blunders. So pull up your ears for a seat close to the action, and please join me, Steve Morantz, for That Championship Season.
Our story begins on June 2, 2003. The Detroit Pistons hire a new head coach, his name Larry Brown. The 62-year-old Brown is hired for one purpose, to elevate the Pistons from contender to champion. He arrives in Detroit with a resume as long as 8 Mile Road. College ball at North Carolina, 1964 U.S. Olympic team, all-star point guard in the old ABA, three-time ABA Coach of the Year with the Denver Nuggets. In 1988, Brown coached Kansas University to a national title. In 2002, he was inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame. He has two replacement hips and three marriages. Larry Brown comes to Detroit with a reputation as a teacher and tactician. His MO is to take underperforming teams and make them better. But, and there's always a but, Brown's resume tells another story. The Pistons will be his 11th team in 31 seasons. Davidson and UCLA are on his resume. His NBA stops include New Jersey Nets, San Antonio Spurs, Los Angeles Clippers, Indiana Pacers, and most recently, the Philadelphia 76ers. He comes to Detroit as something of a punchline.
In a sense, all of human existence is equally divisible into two parts, those times when Larry Brown is about to quit his old job and those times when Larry Brown is about to take his new job.
When Larry Brown has his introductory press conference for a new city, he already has 1 foot out the door.
Larry Brown is available. This is not a recording.
He's a gypsy. You know, he gets it, gets ants in his pants. He needs to dance.
He's coaching's version of a nomad. No need for that sturdy good furniture you buy when you plant down roots because there are no roots.
Sports Illustrated ran a profile of Brown in 1984 with the headline, "Where are you going to be next year, Larry?" Lynn Zinser would write in the New York Times, "There is something comforting about a day in which the biggest news hardly seems like news at all. Larry Brown resigning from an NBA team or being fired or mysteriously finding the locks changed on his office door falls into the category of the sun rising in the morning or snow falling in winter." His nickname was Next Town Brown. Vagabond, nomad, rolling stone, carpetbagger. Larry Brown was any and all of those. Drew Sharp writes in the Detroit News, "With his age and history, you have to wonder how long he'll be here." John Nio writes in the Detroit News, "Ready or not, Detroit, here he comes. He is arguably the game's preeminent teacher among active NBA coaches, one whose basketball family tree traces back from Dean Smith to Fog Allen to James Naismith. Throw in Henry Iba, John McClendon, Frank McGuire, and Pete Newell, and you'll begin to appreciate his insistence on doing things the right way. That's a phrase Pistons fans will hear often with Brown at the helm." Brown tells the Detroit media, "I hope this is my last stop. I am confident this will be my last stop. I will be 63 in September. I don't want to put my family through this move again or my assistant coaches. I am here for the long haul." Of course, in hindsight, we know that Detroit was not Larry Brown's last stop, not even close. The count rose to 14 through 2016. But Detroit was one for the ages. Of all the teams Larry Brown coached and would coach, the Pistons of 2004 were the best. His career is as vast and sprawling as a Russian novel. Think War and Peace or Crime and Punishment. The Russian context is not far-fetched. Brown's grandfather was a baker for the last Tsar of Russia before the Bolshevik Revolution. His grandfather immigrated to the U.S. and started up his own bakery in Long Beach, Long Island. Brown grew up in an apartment above his grandfather's bakery. His father died of a heart attack when he was six, after which his mother worked in the bakery to support he and his older brother, Herb. Those were some of the details that emerged from a 1984 Sports Illustrated profile by Gary Smith. As Smith told it, "For Brown, the trauma of losing his father at a young age set in motion a life of abandoning others before they could abandon him. He had distant relationships with his mother and brother, and when he got to Detroit, he was on his third marriage." Gary Smith wrote of Brown, "A whole society that had begun to live by that same principle of mobility and transience and rootlessness would see in him the thing that made it uneasy about itself. How easy had it become to cut ties and move on, to change jobs and communities and partners, to pass an entire life in the topsoil." Whether that was true or not, there was something about Brown that inspired profound generalities. It was easy to be cynical about Brown. He had coached UCLA to the NCAA title game in 1980 and lost to Louisville. But that appearance was later vacated and UCLA put on probation because players had gotten improper benefits. Brown led Kansas to the NCAA title in 1988 and was coach of the year. But recruiting violations on his watch got the Jayhawks banned from postseason play in 1989 and placed on probation for 3 years. In 1993, after Brown took over the Indiana Pacers, the Chicago Tribune ran a headline, "Nomadic Past Haunts Larry Brown." Brown told reporter Sam Smith that he hated the jokes about his job changes. He said, "It seems to be, no matter what I've done, that's what people acknowledge me for. I'm proud of what I do and bust my tail. The thing I want most is for everyone to say, he made us better when he was here and left us better than when he came." That was 1993. Brown lasted 4 seasons with the Pacers, followed by 6 seasons with the 76ers. He guided the Sixers to the finals in 2001 and lost to the Lakers. Author Charlie Rosen wrote that Brown never left a position on good terms with any of his players or employers. According to Rosen, Brown delegated little authority to his assistant coaches and would not let them speak to the media. Rosen wrote that Brown perpetually preached a team concept, but just as frequently he took credit for wins and blamed his players for losses. Brown defended his career in a 2017 interview with Graham Bensinger.
"I gave every job I had the most I could give. And I'm proud of everything I've done, every practice I went to, every game I coached. And I don't think I shortchanged anybody. But when you have a track record like me, people have a right to have their opinion about who you are and what you're about. I wish they would get to know me a little bit before they would, you know, come to these conclusions. But that's just the way it is."
When Brown took over the Pistons in June 2003, they were a good team, the first winning team Brown had inherited. The previous season, they had reached the conference finals under Rick Carlisle. But Carlisle was fired because GM Joe Dumars and owner Bill Davidson wanted more. Dumars had played for the Pistons when they won back-to-back titles in 1989 and 1990. Those teams, known as the Bad Boys, had set a high crossbar. Since then, the Pistons had come up short. Brown took the job because he saw an abundance of talent on the Pistons roster.
"I think I can make a difference in terms of teaching them how to play and the right way to play. And I'm hopeful that this franchise is going to play at a high level for a long time. That's my challenge."
Chauncey Billups, the seventh-year guard playing for his fifth team, was dubbed Mr. Big Shot because he had a knack for sinking clutch shots. Rip Hamilton, the fifth-year guard, came from a family of long-distance runners and was a superb athlete. He would break his nose early in the season and start to wear a clear plastic face mask that became his trademark. Tayshaun Prince, the second-year small forward with a long wingspan, had barely played as a rookie, but his upside was so high that the Pistons passed on Carmelo Anthony in the 03 draft. Ben Wallace, the eighth-year forward-slash-center, was the NBA rebound leader the previous two seasons. Wallace was known for his intimidating defense and his larger-than-life afro. Billups, Hamilton, Prince, and Wallace were the headliners. Their supporting cast included centers Mehmet Okur and Eldon Campbell, forwards Corliss Williamson and Darvin Ham, guards Chucky Atkins, Bob Sura, and Lindsey Hunter, and at the end of the bench, rookie center Darko Milicic. The Pistons lost their opener at home to Indiana, now coached by Rick Carlisle. Then they won 5 in a row and went to the West Coast and lost 3 in a row. At the end of November, Rip Hamilton popped for 44 against the Cavs with rookie LeBron James, and the Pistons finished the month at 12-6. In mid-December, they lost 7 of 9, with another loss to Carlisle on the Pacers, and dropped to 16-13. Ben Wallace declared, "Starting with me, we have to do something different." And so they did. The Pistons reeled off 13 straight wins, a franchise record, with number 13 coming against defending NBA champ San Antonio. Then they dropped 3 in a row, won 4 in a row, and dropped 6 in a row. On February 19th, the Pistons acquired power forward Rasheed Wallace in a three-team deal with Atlanta and Boston. A two-time All-Star, Rasheed Wallace, no relation to Ben Wallace, had started the season with Portland and was traded to Atlanta, where he played one game. The Pistons gave up spare parts and two first-round draft picks to make the deal, which also brought guard Mike James. Rasheed had spent most of the previous 8 years as Portland's best player, but he was a loudmouth and malcontent, their perennial leader in technical fouls. In the 2000-2001 season, Rasheed notched 41 technicals in 77 games, an average of 0.53 technicals per game. At one point, Rasheed was suspended by the NBA for 7 games because he threatened an official on a loading dock after a home game. GM Joe Dumars said of Rasheed, "We know about all the issues. We feel this is a guy who can help us make a run when it comes to playoff time." The Pistons were 34-22 before they got Rasheed and 20-6 the rest of the way, an improvement in win percentage from 607 to 769. Rasheed Wallace's averages of 13.7 points and 7 rebounds were unspectacular, but his impact on the defensive end was huge. With Rasheed, the Pistons allowed 78.9 points per game in the regular season, a nearly 8-point improvement over the games when Mehmet Okur started at power forward. The Pistons finished 54-28, 7 games back of Indiana in the Eastern Conference Central Division. They held opponents to 84.3 points per game, lowest in the league. They blocked 7 shots per game, tops in the league. They averaged 90.1 points per game, 24th in the league. The playoffs began April 18th against the Milwaukee Bucks. Led by Michael Redd, the Bucks were first-round cannon fodder and went down in 5 games. Dale Hoffman of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel wrote after Game 5, "Detroit, all defense, rebounds, and attitude, is whom the Bucks want to be. This season was clearly a start, but this series showed the Bucks how far they have to go. Both teams had blue collars, but the Pistons had blue-ribbon athletes to go with them. The difference is about 12 points a game." New Jersey's Nets were next, led by Jason Kidd, Kenyon Martin, and Richard Jefferson. Detroit won games 1 and 2 at Auburn Hills. Then the Nets won games 3 and 4 at East Rutherford, New Jersey. Game 5, back at the Palace, was a triple overtime classic that featured a half-court tray by Chauncey Billups to tie the game at the end of regulation.
Pistons need a 3, and they have just under 3 seconds to do it. Here's Chauncey Billups. Here it is. He's got it! He's got it! Chauncey Billups hits the 3. Overtime!
But 4 Pistons fouled out, and the Nets won 127-120 as Nets reserve Brian Scalabrine was the unlikely hero with 17 points and 4 three-pointers. With their backs to the wall, the Pistons won Game 6 on the road, 81-75, as Rip Hamilton scored 24 and clinched the game with a jumper with 15 seconds left. Game 7 was back at the Palace. The Pistons clamped down, forced 16 turnovers, 36% shooting, and squashed the Nets 90-69. Leading the way was Ben Wallace, of whom Mitch Albom wrote, "Ben Wallace was insane. Just when you think you've seen it all, he morphs into a shooting guard. He hit 8 of his first 9 shots, including many outside jumpers. He finished with 18 points in addition to his rebounds and defense." Brad Parks of the Newark Star-Ledger wrote, "The Nets were ridden out of this suburban Detroit town with all the decorum of a tar and feathering. Their best player, Jason Kidd, was a broken shell of his all-NBA self, rendered scoreless in the biggest game of the season. Their half-court execution was reduced to some kind of punchline. Their every flaw was exposed by a Detroit team that wore the Nets down and then finally drummed the Nets out of this Eastern Conference semifinal." The Pistons faced Indiana in the Eastern Conference Final. The matchup pitted the Pistons against Rick Carlisle, their former coach, who was canned to make way for Larry Brown, who had coached the Pacers for four seasons in the 1990s. Carlisle's Pacers, led by an aging Reggie Miller, Jermaine O'Neal, and Ron Artest, had won 3 of 4 against the Pistons and had won the Central Division, 7 games ahead of the Pistons. Carlisle and Brown added a dramatic backstory to the matchup. The series lived up to expectations. Game 1 in Indianapolis went to the Pacers 78-74 when Reggie Miller hit a 3 in the final 30 seconds. After the loss, Rasheed Wallace, who had stunk out the arena with 4 points and 5 fouls, told the media.
Y'all put it in the front page, back page, middle page, wherever. Headliners, column 1 or 2, we will win game 2.
You're not backing off.
We will win game 2.
Sure enough, the Pistons did win game 2, thanks to a game-saving block on Reggie Miller by Tayshaun Prince in the final minute. The Pistons notched 19 blocks in the 72-67 win, including 5 by Rasheed Wallace. Back at the Palace for Game 3, the Pistons won another close one, 85-78, behind Ben Wallace's 17 points, 16 rebounds, and 3 blocked shots. Game 4 went to the Pacers, 83-68, for which Larry Brown blamed himself for inadequate preparation. Brown did a better job in Game 5, won by the Pistons, 83-65, behind Rip Hamilton's 33 points. They went back to the Palace for Game 6, where the Pistons fell behind by 14 points in the first quarter. Then the Pistons clamped down, and the Pacers went nearly 7 minutes without a field goal. The turning point was a flagrant foul on Ron Artest for elbowing Rip Hamilton in the jaw. Hamilton's 2 free throws broke a tie at 59, after which Rasheed Wallace roared in for an offensive rebound and a dunk, and a 4-point lead. Final score, Pistons 69, Pacers 65. Mitch Albom wrote, "This was a huge moment for Larry Brown, hired 1 year ago. He did the job. There will be no ghost of Rick Carlisle." How did the Pistons get here? Defense. Rip, Rasheed, more defense. They did it by adjusting to Carlisle's adjustments. They did it by blocking 1 of every 8 Indiana shots. Now the Pistons advance to the finals as a huge underdog against the Western Conference champion Los Angeles Lakers. This would be the 3rd NBA Finals between Detroit and LA. In 1988, the Showtime Lakers narrowly won in 7 games. 2 years later, the Bad Boy Pistons drubbed the Lakers in 5. The Lakers had won 3 straight titles from 2000 to 2002, behind future Hall of Famers Shaquille O'Neal and Kobe Bryant. In 2003, they lost to the San Antonio Spurs. After that, the Lakers went out and acquired 2 more future Hall of Famers, Karl Malone and Gary Payton. With Shaq, Kobe, Malone, and Payton, the Lakers reached the finals by beating Houston and Yao Ming, the Spurs and Tim Duncan, and Minnesota and league MVP Kevin Garnett. Yet, though heavily favored, the Lakers had problems. Jealousy and distrust between O'Neal and Bryant stretched back several seasons. Lakers coach Phil Jackson would later write that Bryant rebels against authority. On top of everything, Bryant was fighting a rape charge in Vail, Colorado from the previous summer. LA Times columnist Bill Plaschke wrote of Bryant, "For all of Bryant's sensational returns from court dates, his case consistently tugged at the fabric of this team and distracted it from its journey. The stresses changed Bryant, and his increasingly selfish behavior increasingly changed the team's attitude toward him." The criminal charge would be dropped in September when the alleged victim would decline to testify, and Bryant later settled a civil suit out of court long after the 2004 finals. More problems arose when aging veterans Malone and Payton didn't work out as the Lakers hoped. Malone's knees at age 40 and in their 19th NBA season were shot. Payton struggled in Coach Phil Jackson's triangle offense. Payton, wrote Plaschke, buckled under the constraints, blanched when he didn't get the ball from Bryant, and ultimately quit. Another storyline was the tension between Larry Brown and Phil Jackson. Author Charlie Rosen writes, in 2001, Brown was clearly outcoached as his Philadelphia 76ers were beaten in a five-game championship series by Phil Jackson's Lakers. Brown has made no secret of his detestation of Jackson, calling him unbearably arrogant, and Jackson has returned the favor, calling Brown incredibly arrogant. Game one at the Staples Center set the tone. Mitch Albom writes, the Pistons came, they saw, and they didn't break down in terror. Forget the pressure. Forget the reputation of their opponent. Forget the movie stars or the Laker girls. The Pistons brought their defense with them, as they always do, and they were pleasantly surprised to find some space between them and the men defending them for once. Chauncey Billups's 22 points led four Pistons in double figures. The Lakers shot 29 of 73 from the floor. Shaq had 34 points, Kobe 25. Final score, Pistons 87, Lakers 75. In game two, the Pistons led by six with 50 seconds left. But Kobe drilled a three with 2.7 seconds left to tie the game at 89. In overtime, Kobe stayed hot to finish with 33 points, and the Lakers evened the series with a 99-91 win. Larry Brown took some heat for not having the Pistons foul Shaq, a notoriously bad free-throw shooter, when he had the ball before Kobe's three-pointer. Brown told the media, "We don't foul in situations like that," to which Phil Jackson said, "We were lucky they didn't foul." Game three, back at the Palace, wasn't close. Rip Hamilton and Chauncey Billups combined for 50 points. Shaq and Kobe combined for 25. The Lakers shot 36% from the field. Final score, Pistons 88, Lakers 68. The 68 points were the fewest scored by the Lakers in 561 playoff games in the 50 years of the shot clock era. After the game, Brown was asked if he was surprised at the Pistons' dominance. "I'm shocked," said Brown. Game four at the Palace was tied after three quarters thanks to a monster 36-point, 20-rebound effort by Shaq. But Shaq got little help, and he tired just enough in the fourth quarter for the Pistons to take control. Rasheed Wallace had his best game of the season with 26 points and 13 rebounds. Chauncey Billups added 23. Phil Jackson's sour grapes complaints about the referees went unheeded. Final score, Pistons 88, Lakers 80. Game five at the Palace was a coronation. The Pistons led by 10 at half and by 23 after three quarters. Five Pistons scored in double figures led by Rip Hamilton's 21. Ben Wallace had 22 rebounds and baited Shaq into early foul trouble. As time wound down, Brown emptied his bench, then put his face in his hands and took a moment to himself, savoring his first NBA title.
The Detroit Pistons have just shocked the Los Angeles Lakers. 187 to win the NBA title. The number two seed in the Eastern Conference. And the Detroit Pistons, this gritty, gutty, defensive-oriented team, plays phenomenally on both ends of the floor and beat the Lakers in five.
At the end, it was Pistons 100, Lakers 87. Chauncey Billups was named MVP of the finals. Drew Sharp writes in the Free Press, "It was time to punch out after an honest season's work. Raise your lunch pails in salute. If ever a champion fits the personality of its community, it was these Pistons." Bill Plaschke writes in the LA Times, As if sent down by the sports god to deliver a message, the Detroit Pistons crawled out from the shadows of hard work, away from the anonymity of defense, and into a spotlight that showed the Lakers everything they used to be, a team that shares the ball, a team that shares the floor burns, a team that shares the glory, an NBA champion. Afterward, Brown tells the media, "It's about the players. This sport is about players playing the right way and showing kids that you can be a team and be successful. They do play the right way, and I'm very proud of them." After the loss, the Lakers disintegrated. Jackson made it clear he did not want to coach Kobe and was not offered a new contract. Shaq then demanded a trade and was sent to Miami. Kobe re-signed as a free agent and returned as the foundation of the next Lakers championship in 2009. As defending champions, the Pistons returned to the finals in 2005, but lost to San Antonio in 7 games. Rumors surfaced that Brown would become the Cleveland Cavaliers team president after the playoffs. The rumor became a distraction, and the Pistons decided to dump Brown. He quickly signed to coach the New York Knicks, and after one disastrous season, the Knicks fired him. Brown coached the Charlotte Bobcats from 2008 until he was fired in 2010. He was hired to coach Southern Methodist University in 2012 and was suspended by the NCAA in 2015 for failing to report academic violations committed by his staff. Brown resigned from SMU in 2016. Brown's stock had sunk, but in late 2010, Bill Simmons came out with his NBA history called The Book of Basketball. Simmons listed a handful of gifted leaders who could make a genuine, consistent difference. Brown was named alongside Pat Riley, Greg Popovich, Phil Jackson, Chuck Daly, and Jerry Sloan. Rasheed Wallace retired in 2013 as the NBA's all-time leader in technical fouls with 317. Tayshaun Prince helped the U.S. win basketball gold at the 2008 Summer Olympics and retired from pro ball in 2016. 3 starters on the 04 Pistons, Chauncey Billups, Ben Wallace, and Rip Hamilton, had their numbers retired by the franchise. At the ceremony honoring Hamilton in February 2017, he said of the 2004 Pistons, "Our motto was, we are the best 5 alive. Before every game, that was our chant in the middle of the huddle, best 5 alive. We all knew in order for us to be great at what we do, we need each other. We need our brothers."
Piston fans up on your feet! Time to meet and greet the Ballers, representing the Detroit Pistons! First up, the Gods! Number 1 is out of the University of Colorado in the home red, blue, and white tonight. The 6'3 Chauncey Billups. From Connecticut at 6'7, number 32, Piston God Richard Rip Hamilton. The forward from North Carolina, number 30. At 6'11", once again, time for the world to see Mr. Rasheed Wallace. Number 22, from Kentucky, at 6'9", it's palace time for the Prince, Tayshaun Prince. At 6'9", the center, wearing the big red 3 from Virginia Union University. Ben Wallace. And the head coach of the Detroit Pistons, Larry Brown. Detroit, let's play some basketball.
Thanks for listening to that championship season. The show was researched, written, and produced by me, Steve Morantz. To find more information about this episode and other episodes, please go to our website, championshipseasonpodcast.com. Please subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, which really helps people find it. You can also find the show at virtually anywhere else you find podcasts. We'll be back soon with another tale from that championship season.